Good evening, everyone. You're listening to KABF 88.3, and this is Speak Up Arkansas. On this show, we talk about public policies, the ways they affect the everyday lives of folks right here in Arkansas, and how we can hold our elected officials and policymakers accountable for the decisions they make on our behalf. One way that we participate in government is by voting. Everybody knows that. We select our leaders. But how do we let the folks who are in office know how we feel about the decisions they make that affect us? That's what we talk about on this show. So we hope you listen, learn, and then go one step further and act. That's why we call it Speak Up Arkansas. My name's Carrie Cernell. I am with Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. We work to advance public policy that helps kids lead healthy and productive lives. We do research and analysis of public policy, organize coalitions to drive change, and serve as a voice for children at the state capitol and in Washington, D.C. This evening, we are going to talk about brains. I don't see how it gets better than that. Learning happens over a lifetime, of course, but the brain development that takes place during the first 5 years of life is nothing short of miraculous. The pathways that are formed during that critical time period set the stage for all of the learning that will take place over a child's life, which is why early experiences are so incredibly important. It's a fascinating subject, and we've got a studio full of big brains who are going to tell us why early brain development is so critical and what's that got to do with public policy. And as always, we'll take your questions. So give us a call if you've got a question for our panel of big brains. We've got the phone number over here is 501-433-0088. And here's who's with me in the studio. We have with us today Pam Toler, who is regional coordinator for Arkansas State University Childhood Services. She's also coordinator of the Imagination Library of Saline County, the coordinator of the Bryant Early Education Coalition, and serves on the advisory board for Dolly Parton's Imagination Library, Arkansas. We also have with us Dr. Peggy Sissel Phelan, a co-founder of Reach Out and Read and the founder, president, and CEO of Brainchild Press, which is an education publishing and consulting company. And we also have with us one of my colleagues at Arkansas Advocates, Dr. Jenny Blankenship, education policy director at AACF. She's a passionate education advocate on and off the clock. She collects high-quality books for students in the LRSD through the Open Book Project and serves on the board of the Public Education Foundation of Little Rock, among many other irons she has in the fire. So don't forget, we want you to call in and be part of this conversation. So be sure to call us with your questions as we move forward. It's 501-433-0088. So let's get to it. Pam, you are going to tell us a little bit about the brain, how the brain develops, and why the earliest years are so critical for our children.
Brains we learn from studying rats, or we learn from studying cadavers. So with the advancement of technology in the last 20 years, we have made enormous strides in learning what the brain is doing on a cellular level, how it functions and how it develops. And so, and we can do that ethically and medically. It's medically possible to do that ethically and morally in infants. So when a baby is born, we know that everyone is born with about 100 billion brain cells or so, but these are like little light bulbs that are not lit up.
Have we got you now? We're having technical difficulties today. Oh. How's that?
So these little light bulbs, they're like little light bulbs all over the brain, but they're dark, they're not lit up. And so the way they get lit up is they get wired as if a baby has an experience. So every time a baby has an experience, those neurons are connected. There are 700 new neural connections that happened every second in that child's brain those first few years of life. So the development of that architecture is amazing, and it's critical.
Okay. It sounds like we are having some problems with your mic. I'm so sorry. If
Are we supposed to be able to hear through this?
Yes. Okay, this is awesome. All right, well, thank you. We'll be back.
Testing. Okay, here we are. We got all these buttons to push and we found the right ones. Everything is doing good. Let's see if we're broadcasting there. We're doing that. Okay, I'm going to turn it back over to your host in Justin Moskosh. Hold the phone just a minute.
Okay, but the problem?
Substance abuse problems impact 1 in 3 people. If you or someone you know has problems with their use of alcohol or drugs, there is help available. Christopher Gerhardt is a licensed and certified substance abuse counselor in the Argenta District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, with over 20 years of experience. Chris offers client-centered individual counseling and assessments. His services are confidential, private, and professional. Because he does not take insurance or government funding, counseling moves at your pace with your goals in mind. He also does DOT-SAP evaluations for people in safety-sensitive positions. If you have a CDL and have made a mistake, he can help you get back on the road. Give him a call at 501-478-0182. 501-478-0182, or check out his website at ChristopherGerhardt.com, a KABF community partner.
You know what's wrong with American politics? It's that there just aren't enough ways for giant corporations and mega-rich political donors to funnel their big bucks into our elections and buy our government. At least that's what Donald Trump, the Republican Party, and a devious group of right-wing political pastors are saying. And, of course, they've got a diabolical fix for this, quote, problem. Their scheme is to turn tax-exempt far-right churches into gushing sewers of political money, secretly channeling unlimited amounts of cash from corporations and right-wing extremists through the churches into the campaigns of politicians who'll do their bidding. They don't admit this, of course, instead wrapping their scheme in the pious rhetoric of religious freedom. Their point of attack is the Johnson Amendment, a 1954 law passed by LBJ that prohibits tax-exempt charities, including churches, from endorsing candidates, funding campaigns, and directly engaging in politics. The Alliance Defending Freedom, an extremist Christian operation pushing repeal of Johnson's Amendment, asserts that banning churches from overt political campaigning lets the IRS, quote, tell pastors what they can and cannot preach. Clever, but totally dishonest. First, the issue is not whether the government can tell church groups what to say, it can't, but whether taxpayers should subsidize a church group's electioneering views and activities. Second, and most diabolical, repealing the Johnson ban would turn these churches into holy temples of dark money. Special interest funders would rush to these political, quote, charities, not only because the churches would be super secret super PACs, but churches are tax exempt, meaning the donors would also be blessed with a tax deduction for their corrupting campaign contributions. This is Jim Hightower saying taxpayers would be underwriting the corruption of American politics. How ungodly is that?
Hightower's comment.
Okay, we're going to try this again. No, okay. Okay. So, Pam, I'm so sorry. You were talking to something. You had a great head of steam going. And if you can
jump back into talking a little bit about how the brain develops. And we can see if we can get...
Okay, can you hear me? You can hear
me?
Great.
Yes.
So as I was saying, because of the advancements in technology, we know what's going on in a newborn's brain on the cellular and developmental level of those brain cells. So when a baby's born, you have about 100 billion brain cells. That's kind of all you get. You might develop more later, but fortunately, that's way more than what you need. And so it's like a billion little light bulbs in the brain that aren't lit up yet. They have to be wired in order to work. So in those first few years of life, those neurons wire at 700 new neural connections per second. So the amount of brain growth and development that's happening is just astronomical in those first few years of life. So the way a baby, way that his neurons are wired is when a baby has an experience. So when an experience is repeated, those neural pathways become thicker and more robust, and eventually they become permanent. So if those experiences are positive, then you've wired that brain for positive development and growth. Unfortunately, if those experiences are negative due to neglect or abuse, and they're chronic, then we actually wire the brain in a negative way, in a really harmful way that affects them the rest of their lives. So if a baby's body grew as quickly, I'm sorry, if the baby's brain, no, if the baby's body grew as quickly as the brain did at 1 month of age, that child would weigh 170 pounds. That's the amount of growth that's happening in those first few years of life. So you've got to think about it like the architecture of the brain. It's as it wires, as a baby has experiences, and many experiences, they need many experiences, that architecture is either going to be really sturdy or it's going to be fragile. So if you think of it like you're building all the simple circuits upon which more complex circuits later in life are built. So I often use the analogy of dial-up computers. If you remember the days of dial-up computer systems, when you would turn the computer on, it would take forever to fire up, and then you would try to surf the internet, and it would take forever for a page to load. That's kind of like if a baby doesn't get what they need, their architecture of their brain, the circuitry of their brain, the capacity they have to learn is so diminished that they can't download the information that they need later when they're trying to do more complex learning. But if a baby does get what they need and they have a really thick or dense architecture, all those neurons are wired heavily and they're wired positively, then when a child later is trying to learn more complex learning, they've got a wonderful foundation upon which those circuits can be placed. So about 85% of a child's intellect, their personality, and their social skills are wired by the time they're 5 years old. So that's why where a baby is in those first 5 years of life, what kind of care they're getting is so incredibly critical to who that child is going to be as an adult. Their learning, their health, their behavior, all of that is impacted by the experiences they have in those first 5 years. It doesn't matter where that child is, as long as they're in a high quality, positive, rich learning environment those first 5 years, then that sets them up to be successful adult later.
I always think it's so remarkable to think about those early experiences and how so much brain development happens that it's kind of like it's so dense in that first 5 years, and then after that everything really builds on that. So we have Dr. Cecil Phelan here to tell us about a little bit about this. You know, Pam has emphasized the importance of early experiences. What kind of early experiences do children need for optimal brain development? And tell us a little bit about how anyone can provide those to infants and toddlers to improve their chances at school readiness.
I'd like to quote, to start, a famous researcher who did research on child development and language. And what he said was, talk is the greatest tool that parents can use to develop their child's intellectual skills. We're born as social beings, and as social beings, we are wired to communicate with others. Being able to have a caregiver that is responsive to an infant's cues, that provides a lot of loving time and attention, and provides a lot of sensory experiences such as language, singing, talking, reading, rhyming, is absolutely essential to their school readiness. It used to be that we, before the decade of the brain in the 80s, when we started learning about all of this, it used to be that we thought that simply a good caregiving environment was what a child needed. And since that time, we have learned that not only does cognition build throughout the child's life, that the whole basis of that cognition is really language. Because language is where you get your concepts, you get your way of understanding the world. And you know, it's important to realize that we as adults, we are the gateway to a child's world. Everything that they know about the world comes from the way we touch them and talk to them and care for them and nurture them. And as Pam said, if you are in an abusive situation, then those kind of positive brain connections are not being built. One of the reasons for that is chronic stress. Our brain releases a hormone called cortisol when we are stressed. And for children who are chronically stressed in situations where there's a lot of noise, disruption, they're not being attended to, a real chaotic situation, perhaps a depressed mother, they're not going to develop as they should. So one of the things that that people all across the country and the world now are doing is emphasizing to parents the different things that children need in order to develop well. I'd like to talk a little bit about language and why that's important. Language is important not only because it leads to learning how to talk, and all children learn how to talk. We're wired as social communicative people. But not all children have the same kind of experiences, as Pam mentioned, experiences with language. Some parents speak, you know, 5,000 words a day to their child. Other parents speak 20,000 words a day. And some parents speak in you know, very descriptive terms and look to their child to encourage to get their response. And other parents are simply saying, you know, very short statements. But language is key to learning about the world, both expressive and receptive. And that only comes and grows through language experience.
Through language experience, through talking and listening.
And yes, talking and listening and having, being read to, being sung to, playing word games, parents and caregivers using rhymes. There are so many things that are tied up in eventually being literate. The latest definition of literacy is that literacy is talking, listening, reading, and writing, not just reading. What that supposes is the fact that if you have a rich language experience and you've been able to develop a lot of vocabulary and you've had lots of opportunities to express yourself, all of that helps you to become literate. Not that we're going to teach kids how to read at age 3, but by age 3, the level of vocabulary that a child has is predictive of their success in school and their ability to read. So you just cannot downplay how important it is that reading, talking, singing, and rhyming is.
Interesting. Okay. I think this is such fascinating subject matter. So Dr. Jenny Blankenship, my colleague at Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families, we recently released a brief about talking, reading, and singing, creatively titled Talk, Read, Sing. And Jenny, tell us a little bit about what's in that brief and, you know, and kind of what policymakers can do to set our kids up to succeed.
Sure. First, I want to give listeners a little bit of background about one of the partners that Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families works very heavily with on our education work, and that's the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading. So together we work on a range of issues that affect how well children are on track to be able to read by the end of the third grade. And researchers tend to think of this point as the point in a child's education when they go from learning to read to reading to learn. And it's a really critical point in a child's educational development, because if you don't make reading, if you're not reading on grade level by that point, it gets harder and harder to keep up in school for the rest of your schooling. So that's what we do with the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading. And one of the recent reports that we co-authored with them, as you mentioned, is called Talk, Read, Sing. It's available on our website at aradvocates.org. It's also on the Campaign for Grade Level Reading's website at ar-glr.org. And it just talks about a lot of the new research that's come out, as Peggy's already talked about, trying to motivate parents and caregivers to talk, read, and sing more frequently with young children, even starting from the prenatal stages. It sounds like when you think of getting a child ready for school and ready to be on track to read, you think of that process as starting around pre-K or kindergarten maybe, but it really starts as soon as they're in the womb. And we encourage parents to start reading and singing and talking to their kids as soon as they exist, because they're able to process a lot more of that language than we realize, and more research is coming out that proves that. In terms of what policymakers can do, we're now working on another report called What Do Infants and Toddlers Need to Be School Ready? And there's a range of issues. We don't have time to get into all of them, but one of the things that kids need is access to lots and lots of books, age-appropriate books that help parents facilitate all the talking and the reading that they need to be doing. Statistics show that about 61% of children from low-income families have no children's books at home, which is tragic to me.
Say that again. What's the percentage?
61% of children from lower-income families have no children's books at home.
No books at all.
It's hard for me to imagine, as a book lover, how can that be? In lower income neighborhoods, the ratio of books to children is one book for every 300 children, which is far below the ratio of 13 books per child in middle and upper income neighborhoods. So you see how these disparities in literacy begin very early on, and that contributes to the achievement gap, and is one of the reasons why it's persisted for so many years, is some of our children that are from disadvantaged backgrounds just don't have access to a lot of tools that they need from a very, very young age. Research shows that even 15 minutes of day reading to a child can expose them to more than 1 million words of text in a year. All of this is critical to development. And again, this is especially important in low-income areas and rural areas that don't often have access to well-funded public libraries or the transportation to get there. So that's one of the things that we're going to recommend in this report to policymakers, is that they adequately fund our public libraries and different programs like the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, which Pam Toler has been a part of. She can talk much more about that. And Peggy founded Reach Out and Read Arkansas here in Arkansas. It's part of a national network, and that's where physicians give out a book every month, I believe, about every month, or
every well child visit,
excuse me. I'm getting that confused with the Dolly Parton Imagination Library, which does give about a book a month for children from ages 0 to 5.
Jenny, one of the reasons why low literacy persists in low income communities is because there's a correlation between level of education and income. And obviously, if you are making, if you have less income, you are have fewer opportunities for good jobs. But low literacy is not something that just happens. A parent, through their modeling and through the kinds of activities that they do, actually either promotes literacy or prevents it. For example, if a parent has not been read to when they were a child, if they don't know nursery rhymes, if they don't see others in their environment, other peers interacting with their babies in a way that's rich and stimulating, then chances are they're not doing it, because we learn our parenting behaviors from others. Now, Reach Out and Read has addressed this issue by emphasizing to parents that you don't have to know how to read well in order to share a book with a baby.
Right.
And you know, as far as getting more libraries in the community, and you know, the whole idea of getting books to families is critical. But that message has to be there. And we know through our literacy work with adults that one of the primary reasons an adult goes to seek help with their reading is their children. And because they start realizing that, oh, you know, I can't help my children as much as I should be. But most don't realize that that starts at birth or prenatally. You know, they start realizing that around kindergarten or so. So, you know, getting the word out and public education campaigns and having everybody spread the word about the importance of talk and reading is essential, so that people understand they can do it no matter what their level of education, income, you know, whether they're ashamed of reading aloud, because a lot of people are who don't read well. A baby doesn't care.
That's a really good point. And I think a lot of parents, you know, have that question when, you know, in particularly in light of some of the demographics that we talked about earlier. I am happy to say we have a caller. So we'll go ahead and put him on, assuming that I can make this happen. Let's see if we can get some magic happening here. Okay, caller, do we have you on the line?
Yeah, I have been listening, and I just want to say a word about how simple it can be to keep kids, little kids, entertained, and how just talking to a baby, even they don't understand what you say, or to a two-year-old that using words they don't understand, or you want to get something off your chest without freaking them out, you can talk about it as long as you are, you know, having a conversation with them. It doesn't have to be all too much goo-goo baby stuff, and it doesn't have to be profound, and you don't have to get to their level, but you know, you might dance around and sing and entertain them, but I'm just putting a push in to make parenting a lot of fun that you can do with a yard and a, you know, pieces of wood and a magazine that you found on the curb, or, you know, just put things in front of them and engage with them. And let's see. Well, I just all you say is very true, especially in the early years. And I think do not underestimate the power of touch in the earliest stages of a child's life, and looking them in the eye and being still and focused on them, and even talking to them and telling them how much you love them. I mean, it doesn't take books and subscriptions or a library to entertain and engage kids when you have a world around you that has, if you have the right attitude, can be eye-opening to a child.
Well, caller, I have to tell you, everybody in here is nodding their heads and raising their hands and wants to respond to what you said. Thank you so much for your call.
Yeah, that was my favorite caller ever, so you win a prize.
Best caller award.
We just started a new prize. I don't know what it's called yet. But thank you so much for saying all of that, and you're so right. One of my favorite things to do with my own son, since he was an infant, is when we're walking through the grocery store, I narrate everything that's on the shelves, and we just talk about food and where food comes from, and I look like a crazy person talking to an infant, but that's all we're talking about here. It doesn't have to be complex. It doesn't take a lot of training, but just, you know, narrate what's going on in the world around you. They pick up on so much more than we realize.
And one of the things, this is Pam, one of my job with A-State Childhood Services is to train child care providers. And so after I give them the big, long speech about how critically important they are and the awesome burden of responsibility they have for all the little brains in their care, and I kind of freak them out, the next thing out of my mouth is, it's not rocket science. It's easy. Just talk to them. Just read to them. Just give them, we call it business talk, which is you need to put on your shoes, and commentary talk, which is you need to put on your shoes because it's time to go outside and we need to protect our feet. And giving them all that extra commentary around the taking care of the business of the day. And talking about the power of touch, we actually have a handout called The Power of Touch that we deliver to child care providers. But one thing that's interesting is the same cells that are on our skin are the same as the lining of the brain. So like literally, when you're touching a child in a positive way, it's like you're stroking their brain. You're helping them develop their brain, almost literally. And it's not just true for children. It's true for all humans. We all love to be touched in a positive way. And it does all kinds of yummy things in our brains and all the chemicals that get released. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing.
Delicious brain chemicals.
Yeah. This is Peggy. Caller, I just want to say the people that you love in your life are so lucky. And I bet the children in your life are geniuses. I just wanted to respond to your comment about eye contact. Children learn language through other people, not through TV, not through radio, not through any kind of screen. Now, we're not talking about 4 and 5 year olds that might be watching Sesame Street, because that has been shown to be very helpful and educational. What I'm talking about is the worst thing you can do is to lay an infant down in front of a TV propped up so that they can watch the TV. They will get nothing out of that. Language is learned when the parent or caregiver is face to face, when they're responding to a child's cues, when the child can see their mouth move, because part of language is not just learning words, it's learning how to articulate and move those mouth muscles. So it's just absolutely essential that there be that face-to-face interaction. And also, you know, your comment about, you know, you can pretty much say anything. Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, if you're cued into your child's cue, into your what is interesting to your child and talking about that, then they're going to learn more about that. The final thing I want to say is that for some people, it is hard to think about what to say to a little tiny infant that's, you know, in your arms that can't talk back. My company is providing a free app to anyone who is interested that is called Time to Talk to Baby. It's still in development, but if you are interested in getting more information about that, you can let Carrie, our host, know and get your information to her. It's designed to provide topics, words of the day, songs and rhymes, tips and developmental information in an audio format so that parents can see how to, you know, reach out and talk with that child. 30 to 45 seconds a day. That's all it is. You get one message a day for 3 years if you start at birth.
That's pretty neat. So that's in development now and it hasn't launched.
Right, right.
Okay.
We tested it last year. We were given, we had a grant from the Department of Health and Human Services in Washington, and were chosen as one of 10 innovations that had the ability to close the word gap.
That's so exciting. Well, you know what? If you're out there listening and you want more information about that, just shoot us a note at speakupar@gmail.com, and we'll make sure that you get information on that app when it launches. That's really a cool tool. And speaking of cool tools, everybody in here kind of works with in some capacity with resources that help parents and educators alike to help build brains in early childhood. And so I wanted to hear more about some of those resources, and then Ginny, I wanted to hear a little bit more about what, you know, since this is Speak Up Arkansas, kind of what people should be talking to their policymakers about, or what should they be looking for. So, but first I want to get to kind of some of these resources, because there's tons of them. If, you know, I once knew a parent that you know, a dad that of a small child that said, well, you know, just when my son was little, I just read the sports page of the newspaper to him. And as far as I'm concerned, that works. Like, that's totally fine. We can talk about the Cardinals scores or whatever. But tell us a little bit more about some of the diverse resources that you all work with and how they get in the hands of parents and kids.
I currently work with Arkansas Imagination Library. We just formalized into a 501c3 like this summer. We are, I think, in 52 out of the 75 counties in Arkansas. So a parent can go to imaginationlibrary.com, and there is a tab at the top that says, I believe it says register my child, and you can put in your address and it will tell you if there is a local affiliate in your county. If there is, you may sign your child up. It gives you the information of how to sign your child up with that particular affiliate. And your child, as long as they are in that geographical designation and they're under the age of 5, it's absolutely free. You'll get a book mailed to you, to the child. It's a brand new book. It's age appropriate, so a 2-month-old child gets a very different book than a 4-year-old child. And it's free to the parents. It comes every month until the child turns 5. The very first book is always The Little Engine That Could. The last book is always something about going off to kindergarten. In the older book, the younger children books are hardback, so they're, you know, because they chew on them and bite them and all that juicy stuff that they do. And they leak a lot. But the 3 to 5 year olds, those books can fold up and go in the mailbox. So inside those books, there's a flap. And so that flap tells a parent what to do before you read the book. It tells what to do while you're reading the book. It says what to do after you read the book. And then it suggests activities you might do to follow up just to reinforce what was learned. And the books are a wide range. They're chosen by a panel of experts. There's Caldecott winners. They're nonfiction and fiction. A wide variety of subjects, and they change up. So, and if there's twins, they each get their own book. It's got the child's name on it. They're brand new, and they come, you know, saran wrapped.
Love that.
And so it's free. We're working hard. We want to be in 75 counties by October. That's a very lofty goal. Don't know that we'll make it, but we've got a lot of leads in a lot of counties, and so hopefully in the next year for sure that will be accessible to the next year to 18 months, it'll be accessible hopefully to every child in Arkansas.
That's so awesome. Tell us a little bit about Reach Out and Read Arkansas and how you all help.
Well, as Jenny mentioned, it's a medical intervention with the understanding that that reading and language is critical to, you know, positive child development. And Reach Out and Read was started in 1989 in Boston Medical Center. And it is now in every state of the union. It's in all territories of the U.S. Reach Out and Read provides about 4 million books a year to families. And here in Arkansas, we serve about 60,000 kids a year. But since we founded in 2002, we've given over 500,000 books during the well-child visit. So we're pretty proud of that figure.
As you should be. How do parents access it? So if it's a medical intervention, is this something that a pediatrician will identify, or what's the access point?
Right. Well, like one of the drug ads, you know, ask your doctor about.
awesome books.
It is a program that the physician and the particular clinic has to adopt. Mm-hmm. And there are several right here in the central Arkansas area that that provide that service. But if you're interested in more information to find out if a care provider that you are near does the Reach Out and Read program, you can go to their national website, reachoutandread.org, and put in your zip code, and it will tell you where there is someone close to you. I'd like to spend a little minute to talk about technology.
Please.
When in the 1990s, there was a study done that showed that some parents talk a lot to their kids and some parents don't. And that's where we get the term the word gap, because more educated parents and professional level parents talked 50 million words more over the course of 4 years than a family who is in on welfare or low income. And so we know that there's this word gap out there and we're working towards it. Well, shortly after that study, a very wealthy family who made their money on actually the Accelerated Reader Program, many of us are familiar with that in school, decided that they wanted to do something about this. The study that had been done, it took 5 years to go through the data and come up with findings. Well, what these very wealthy people did was they put together a team of engineers and speech therapists and computer people, and they spent $50 million of their own money to come up with a little device that can measure the amount of words that's being spoken to a child during the day. And it's called the Lena. And if you'd like more information about that, it's Lena, LEA.org. And people around the world, over 200 people, 200 institutions are using this around the world for various reasons. For example, they are working with child care providers and people who train them to assess the level of talk that is going on in classrooms. They are working in neonatal intensive care units with preemies to encourage the staff who work in there and the parents there to talk more to their kids. And so it's primarily used for research, but a spin-off of that is now available to the public, and it's called the Starling. And it's a little like pacifier clip kind of looking thing. I kind of call it a Fitbit for babies. And it sends information to your smartphone to tell you how many words have been spoken to your child. So if you clip it on at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day when you download it, it will tell you that. And you can set your own goals. You can get, you know, immediate feedback. And it's pretty cool. So if you are interested in getting more information about that, I can steer you there. But I tell you, it's a new world out there.
No joke. Wow. That is just so cool. Hi. So Jenny's taking it all in, like, oh, okay, a starling. I got to get one of those things.
I was just thinking, it's like a Fitbit for your brain.
It's a Fitbit. It's a brain bit.
It's a brain bit. Mm-hmm. That's exciting.
It won't be too long before we start having competitions about it. Really quick, let me throw this in here. If you have any questions, I wanted to give that phone number one more time. It's 433-0088. Call us up. I'm so sorry to have interrupted you.
Okay. Well, let me...
Just thinking of resources and policy. And
well, look, I think the bottom line is that policymakers need to hear from you, listeners, family members, people in the community, about the importance of investing early in our children in Arkansas. We know that it's really important to have great public schools. K-12 is super important. We know that expanding access to and quality of pre-K is super important because that lays the groundwork for everything that happens in K-12. But there's really no bigger bang for the buck than investing in the very earliest years. And, you know, as we've been talking about tonight, there's more and more research that comes out every year that shows us just how important brain development is. And we know there are many programs out there that work. Advocates is going to be coming out with yet another report about the importance of developmental screenings, for example. This is something that happens also in a physician's office during well-child visits. And if we can just focus more on identifying and treating issues earlier in children's lives, then that's going to make so much difference in their health, their well-being, and their educational achievement. We've got to start investing early. And these screenings pick up on everything from vision problems, hearing problems, fine motor skills. Maybe your child is struggling to hold a book or hold a crayon or something like that. And also mental health screenings. All of these things are super important. We're learning more and more about it every year. And we just encourage you to let our leaders know.
Jenny, can I throw something in?
Sure.
We know that less than 3% nationally of all children who are eligible for early intervention services before the age of three, less than 3% receive them. Wow. And that's federal money that provides additional assessments and therapeutic services. So the importance of developmental assessments cannot be understated, because the earlier you start, the more success you're going to have. And, you know, it's unfortunate in rural areas, there might not be a lot of service providers. I've also had daycare providers tell me that if they see a problem with their child and they tell the parent, a lot of parents don't want to deal with it. They would rather pull the child out and rather than be embarrassed, instead of seeking services. But the services, if you're low income, they're free. So we really need to work on our parents and our policymakers to make, you know, all these services accessible.
I think we definitely all agree on that. I mean, everything later hinges on early childhood. I mean, the research, you know, more and more is bearing that out. All of you have brought such important information. And not only have you brought information about that, but y'all have given me a lot of stuff to plug. So I want to do it one more time. We're fixing to plug a lot of stuff, y'all. Oh, well, we're about to take a call. Hi, caller, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Is there a phone number that you can provide with regard to reading to the youngsters that a person can get more information, please?
A phone number?
A reading in what way?
Well, as you were talking about actually reading to the child and not having him in front of the TV, is that an organization that you're sponsoring?
My organization does work in that area under the aegis of Words to Grow On.
Okay.
And we provide information and trainings to people. The app that I mentioned is, you know, that's free and that's going to be available to people. But it just depends what you're looking for. We do training, we do public, you know, speeches, et cetera.
Okay. Well, it's very interesting. You presented it well, and I'd just like to get additional information if it's available.
Okay.
Sure. I can also give you the number for the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading.
Good.
Their number is 501-376-6854.
Got it.
And again, their website is www.ar-glr.net. I think I said org earlier.
You did say org.
ar-glr.net. And the executive director there will be able to connect you with any kind of resources you would be interested in on the importance of talking and reading and singing, grade level reading, all that good stuff.
Very good.
Thank you so much for your call.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. So that was I was just about to remind you all, like our talk, read, sing brief and so many other resources are available through the Arkansas Campaign for Grade Level Reading. You can also find that information at our website, aradvocates.org. You can also sign up to at aradvocates.org to receive information not only about other policy briefs and work that we're doing, reports that we release, but also events that we're doing. And you can sign up there for our legislative alerts so that when it comes time to talk to our policymakers about the issues that really matter, that impact our children, you can receive alerts about what's happening, what's coming up for a vote, and who you need to talk to weigh in. We also have, oh gosh, y'all, I have just been scribbling up a storm. I want to put in one more plug for Imagination Library. You can go to imaginationlibrary.com to register. You can find out if you have a local affiliate. Pam, if somebody doesn't have a local affiliate, is there, what would you recommend, or can they get in touch with you all to?
They can get in touch with me.
Say, hey, how's that whole 75 before October thing going?
Yes, we can. If there's not an affiliate in that area and they are interested in either starting one or maybe know people who might be able to have the means to do that, we absolutely would love to talk to them.
Great. So you can reach out to them through imaginationlibrary.com. Reachoutandread.org is another resource that was mentioned. So enter your zip code and as they say in the pharmaceutical commercials, ask your doctor about Reach Out and Read. Also, the gadgets, is it lena.org?
That's correct. That will give you information about how the technology was developed and the kinds of things that are available.
That's pretty neat. And then, of course, I wanted to remind everyone to shoot us a note at speakupar at gmail.com if you want us to let you know about the Time to Talk to Baby app, because that's a pretty cool tool, too. We have got just a couple more minutes, so I'm wondering if anyone wanted to say anything additionally. What else? If you say no, I'll have to tell jokes. And you don't want me to tell jokes.
Well, that's better than singing.
It is better than singing. Although if any listeners want to put their baby in front of the radio now, we can sing to your baby. We'd be happy to do that. Pam, tell us a little bit about what you all do at Arkansas State Childhood Services. Tell us a little bit about what you all do there, because there's a lot of stuff under that.
The Childhood Services has, I hope my boss isn't listening, because I should know how many different programs we have. There are a lot. What I do is our department, we go into child care centers and we help them to do through technical assistance, through environmental assessments, and through a lot of trainings, just to know we help them deliver high quality or create high quality learning environments for those children birth to 5 years old, and in some school age programs as well.
That's good. I mean, y'all do great work. So we have, we are burning it down, y'all.
Okay, well, I'll give you a few interesting
Who's
statistics.
Who's going to
sing? I'll give you a few interesting statistics. So if a baby is born and goes to child care at age 4 months and they're there until they graduate and go to kindergarten, they will be with those child care providers more than with their kindergarten teachers all the way to the end of ninth grade. They will also be with those child providers more when they're awake and ready to learn. They will be 14 and a half years old until they're with their parents as much as they are with those child care providers. So if a child is in daycare full time, like 7:30 in the morning to 5:30 in the afternoon, they're there from 4 months of age all the way to the end of kindergarten, it's really, really critical that these child care providers know what they're doing. They know what's developmentally appropriate. They know about talking and reading and singing. I did go to a child care center once, and the teachers weren't talking to the babies. And when we asked them why, they said, well, they don't talk back. And so they just didn't know. And so it's that simple. Just talk to them. It's that simple. It's not rocket science. But if you don't know better, you can't do better. So a large part of my job is just making sure or helping teachers know what to do that's developmentally appropriate and developing those brains.
I think that's a really good point, and parents have the same anxiety. You know, how can I have a one-way conversation with my child?
Don't know.
It's okay. Just describe what it is you're doing in this current moment. Just describe what it is that you're seeing. You're driving along, and you've got your child in the back, and you're looking. You know, you're telling them about what you're seeing out the window.
You're literally teaching them how to read. When you talk to your infant, right. You're teaching them how to read.
Right. You know, I have a prediction that, along with the other kinds of standards that we have for daycare centers in terms of ratio and facilities, I predict that since we're able to measure words, that very soon we will start having that be a standard, that people, no matter what their education level, they need to be chatty.
They need to be chatty. And it's amazing. We got chatty in the last 2 minutes. Apparently, all I have to do is threaten to sing, and everybody starts talking. To my guests, Pam Toler, Dr. Peggy Sissel Phelan, Dr. Ginny Blankenship, thank you all so much for being a part of this, and thank you for your patience with the technical difficulties at the first of the show. Thanks to you all for listening. And next week, we are going to talk about the role of government in fighting poverty. We're going to have Dr. Jay Barth with us and Dan Greenberg as well. So it should be a spirited discussion, and I hope you'll tune in for it. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Thank you.
You're listening to KEBF 88.3 FM in Little Rock, the voice of the people.
It's time for Radio Cows.